I have a rule. I have a minimum number of people when I do a workshop. I just did a interim ministry workshop. I get more calls than I can feel. And I would like to have some people that I know that have some concept. Fill-in preaching is good, and many brethren have done a good job, but if somebody understands some of the principles of transition and can help people process what's going on, it's helpful. So I set up a time and had one in Nashville Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And I told them I have a minimum number to conduct the workshop. There has to be at least one other person there, otherwise I'm not going to talk to myself. So, we're going to be a little more chatty this time. And feel free to hold your hand up anytime you get ready, because I really don't know what I'm doing. Of course, that's true all the time, as I told you last hour. They asked me to speak three times on shepherding. Two out of three, they said, do what you want to. One, we want you to talk about developing elders in churches that have never had them before. I've never done that. Let me get out some of my stuff here. So this will be theoretical, and some of you probably know a lot more about it than I do, so feel free to comment. I would say in developing elders, developing shepherds, you need to help people be a disciple of Jesus and not worry about the elder stuff right up front. Because if he's not a disciple of Jesus, he may be a good businessman and be pretty sharp, but he's not going to be a good shepherd. When I go into a church as an interim minister, I have a track that I run on. I have a couple of sermons the first two Sundays, and then I do a series on Luke 9:23. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. I tell people we're not ready to start looking for a preacher. We need to look at ourselves. And so we need to be sure that we're the kind of people and the kind of congregation that would attract the kind of preacher that we want. You know, that's the best way to get ready to get married. Be the kind of person that would attract the kind of person that you'd like to live with for the rest of your life. Don't think you're going to be a flop and get the best one that ever lived, because if she's not any smarter than that, it's probably not going to work out very well. And one of the things that I emphasize is that you need to be the kind of person. You're trying out as well as that preacher's trying out. And so we spend 7 weeks on Luke 9:23. I often do that in the gospel meeting. I tell them that we'll work on one verse this week, and if you want me to do the rest of the Bible, take 31,100 more weeks. And so just schedule that and we'll get started. But Luke 9:23, Jesus said we have to be one who carries our cross. Cross carrying is not for recreation. It isn't fun. It isn't comfortable. Opinion. I think one of the greatest curses of people and churches today is trying to figure out how we can be comfortable. That's one of the issues, again, that I run into in looking for a preacher. They get tired pretty early and they said, let's just get one. I'm tired of working every night. We want to be comfortable. But Jesus wasn't comfortable on the cross, and disciples of Jesus will not be comfortable when they carry the cross. There are four responses in Matthew 26 to cross carrying. When Judas came and planted that betrayal kiss, things started happening. Peter pulled out his sword and slashed off the ear of the servant of the high priest. Opinion, I don't think he was aiming for his ear, but that's what he got. And so the first alternative to cross carrying is carving ears. Many times people burst out in anger. Well, that's not really appropriate. Nothing wrong with anger, but I need to think about how I'm going to use it. Number two, there's cutting out. All his disciples forsook him and fled. Number three, there's calling angels. And that's what Jesus thought about doing. He said, you know what? I could call angels and I wouldn't have to do this. Father would give me more than 12 legions. And that's the one I like. Did you know there's a lot of times that I can do something good and right and helpful that's not what I really need to be doing? When we moved, 1977, I had been fired at the congregation before. Someone asked me when I was in Jeffersonville, what's one of the disappointing things that happened to you in your ministry? I said, December 19, 1976, 10:20 in the morning. Not that I keep records or anything. I had just taught a Bible class. One of the elders said, Brother Jerry, would you step in the office just a minute? And I said, yes, sir. He said, Brother Jerry, I think you ought to think about resigning this morning. Very kind. Well, you know, I'd studied all week long, and I didn't have that in my notes. Hadn't thought about it. And come find out, he hadn't even talked to the other elder. Well, that hurt my feelings. I'd planned to stay there the rest of my life. We had grown Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, contribution every year, knocked on every door in the house three times. Most of the people we were baptized weren't kids in the congregation. And so when I moved, I was so fortunate to find an eldership that would talk to a fired preacher. Please consider those. We had a great ministry in Dalton, Georgia. They said, we'll try it. But I felt a need to prove that I was a good preacher. And I immersed myself. I taught personal evangelism training classes Tuesday morning, Thursday morning, Tuesday night, Thursday night, did personal work. And my kids were crying, we miss our friends, we miss our schools, we miss our house. And I called angels. Well, what'd that get you? A lot of lectureships, trained a lot of people. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not what I needed to be doing, at least part of the time. Angels were present by multitudes at Jesus' birth. After his temptation, angels ministered to him, Matthew 4:11. In Gethsemane, there was one angel, but at crucifixion, there were no angels, no anger, and no exit. And then the fourth alternative is crucifixion. And so I talk about that. I talk about denying self. I talk about crucifixion is painful, physically and emotional. Crucifixion is shameful. It's embarrassing. Well, I'm afraid I might be embarrassed if I visit people. Hey, let me remove all doubt. If you do very much, you will be embarrassed. Crucifixion, carrying the cross, is sustainful. It's to be done daily. How do you do it day after day when you're tired? Cross-carrying is aimful. How do you make cross-carrying decisions? And then cross-carrying is gainful. So if we want to develop good shepherds, we need to develop good disciples of Jesus Christ who will be able to endure the pain and the shame and the exhaustion that comes with ministry. Acts 20:28, we're going to spend the hour on that this afternoon. Therefore, take heed to yourselves and to all the flock. Take heed to yourselves. Take heed to yourselves. Good brother yesterday was working with Randy Willingham. Anybody remember his name? Church planter? Was anybody there? I don't remember his name.
Willie Williams.
Boy, he has some good ideas on that. He goes in and starts brand new from scratch. And what do? He said, you got to develop disciples. You got to develop people who are studying the Bible. I enjoy Bible study where we study the Bible and just read and think about it. When I go into congregation and interim ministry, if they don't already have one, we start a staff meeting. How many does it take to have a staff meeting? You need to have at least two, me and one more. And after that, we'll go. Three things in the staff meeting. Number one is Bible study. Number two is coordination, which I call the secretary running the church. Secretaries are the folks who run the church, but they'll deny it because if it ever gets out, somebody will take their power away. But we coordinate, and then the third part is leadership development, and we read a book about three pages. I try not to learn very much and encourage other people to do that, so we don't read a chapter about three pages. But in our Bible study, somebody gave me this. I think it was Ronnie McFarland, who has worked in China a lot. Ask three questions when you study the Bible. What does this passage say about God? The most important doctrine in the Bible is God. Who is God? Who is He? Number two, what does this Bible say? What does this passage say about people? What does it say about man? Number three, what do I need to do as a result of what I've read? Again, in our educational program, many times we emphasize the knowledge, and obviously we need to learn something. My prejudice is I try not to learn very much. We need to learn something, but Jesus, notice at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, He did not say, whoever does these sayings of man and makes at least 95 on the multiple choice test is a wise man. At the judgment, He didn't say, we're going to pass out the test and you've got to do 97 to get into heaven. But He said, what did you do about it? What did you do about the hungry and the thirsty and the naked and the stranger and all of those people? So I need to study the Bible. Who is God? Who am I? And what do I need to do to be more like what God would have me to be? I read this in Gospel Advocate in August, issue page 31. Churches need to be intentional in making leaders, not finding leaders. Here's a statement. You can disagree with it and help me correct it. I'd be glad to do that. I love criticism. I believe that it is too late, 2 weeks before appointing elders, to start looking for elders. You know, we need some more elders. Who do you think we ought to get? Well, what have you been doing the last 30 years? You're way too late, way too late. Need to start ahead of that. I think we need to start with the babies. In Matthew 18, the disciples said, these kids got runny noses and they're making too much noise. And Jesus said, no, no, no. Bring them on. I like kids. Of such is the kingdom of heaven. Timothy. Paul said, you know, Timothy, how you got to be the Timothy that you are today? It was your grandmother and your mother. That's where it started. And in chapter 3, he said that from a child you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise to salvation. And the word there is the same word that's used of the baby in Mary's womb, from a little bitty baby. One of the things that I've enjoyed doing for a number of years, full-time work, now an interim ministry, I like to play with the kids. Watch it in the congregation to see who pays attention to the children. There's a preacher, there's elders. Do they flock to them or do they just ignore them? I find many times when I go into a church, they just kind of look, they don't expect me to say anything and they just go. But I got a couple of things that I do. I have them to give me a five. Wowee, you are powerful. Whoopee. And in a week or two, they'll start lining up. And we just have the biggest time you ever saw. On the last Sunday that I'm there, shortest time I've stayed is 15 months, the longest 23 months. On that last Sunday, right before I preach, I asked, I want all the kids that I've told them they were powerful to come up on stage. And if they can't walk, carry them up here. And so we get them all up here. I said, ever since I came, I've been telling you you were powerful. We've laughed and we've talked. And we had a good time. I want you to know something. I meant every word of that. You are powerful because God can work through you. When you were born, you messed up everything and changed everything in your parents' house. You don't have to have a lot of education, a lot of money to rearrange the system. You are powerful. I think it's good to pay attention to the kids. Same thing I've done for years and years and years. I have a bowl in my office that has candy. And you kind of have to check it out with the parents. Some don't let them have it, and some do. But when they come in, first of all, I need to know two magic words to get a piece of candy. What are the two magic words? Of course, it's please and thank you. And if they don't know them, I'll teach them. Second thing, before you eat that candy, you need to understand the kind of candy I keep in my office. People who eat this candy become elders, deacons, preachers, Bible class teachers, and song leaders. How old are you? You're 5 years old? Let's see, five, and probably 12, 15 years. Janie, you're going to be a Bible class teacher. Did you know that? You like Bible class teachers? You can be a Bible class teacher, and that's the kind of candy I distribute. You eat that candy, and you'll be a Bible class teacher one of these days. Well, why do you do stupid stuff like that? Because when I was 10 years old, a gospel preacher came and stayed in our house holding a gospel meeting. He had a two-tone 1956, two-tone green, light green, dark green, 1956 Chevrolet. And one morning he said, Jerry, would you like for me to take you to school? And I said, yes, sir. And he took me to school. And on the way to school, he said, Jerry, you're a fine boy. I've known you for a long time, known your parents. I wish you would make up your mind to do something. I said, what's that? He said, I wish you'd make up your mind to be a preacher. He said, I think you'd make a great preacher. That's been 62 years ago. I remember Garland Elkins. I remember the 1956 Chevrolet, light green, dark green. Mustard seeds move mountains. And so where we start developing shepherds is when they're born. Really, if we could start a couple of generations before, it'd work out a lot better, but you got to do the best you can with what you got. So we need to start with the children. A couple of things that I have worked on is some classes. I have a theory that every church has the leaders they want, they have the leaders they deserve, they have the leaders they have trained, they have the leaders that they have prayed for. In any group, if a condition is chronic, either good or bad, it's because everybody likes it the way it is more than what it would take to change it. And so if we're going to change it, we better get started. And again, I think if we're going to develop good shepherds, we're going to have to do more than figure out how many children a man's got to have. And some of those things that we usually go over and over and over again, and I'm all for doing all the qualifications, but a man's not qualified just because he knows the qualifications. I can know the qualifications of the President of the United States, but I'm announcing here at Harding University this day, I'm not running for president in 2020. I know the qualifications, but I'm not going to do it. And so somewhere in our training, we've got to develop shepherds. Let me just mention some things that I do. What I usually do when I get to a congregation, been there 2 or 3 months, and I did this in local work. I said, we're going to have a leadership class. We're going to have it on Wednesday night. We're going to spend an hour and a half. What I would like to do is for you to nominate every man in this church that you believe would make a good elder or deacon somewhere between the next 3 months, the next 40 to 50 years, anywhere in that range, which means every man's eligible. I've had young boys nominated as young as 4 and as old as member in the church. I had one Bible school teacher say, this 4-year-old is outstanding. Well, he wasn't in the class, but you never insult a man or a boy by saying somebody recognizes leadership ability in you. When churches get ready to start looking for a preacher where I'm serving an intern, well, I know a man, but he seems to be happy where he is, and you think it would offend him if we were to contact him, I've never known a preacher to be offended by saying, you're a good preacher and we'd like to talk to you. And I don't think you offend a man by saying somebody, and what I do is write a letter, somebody in this congregation has recognized in you leadership ability. I'll be conducting this class, give them a description, and then have a little card, just turn it in, tell me I'm interested or not interested. You know, you decide what you want to do. When we get into class, we have two or three sections. Number one, we talk about leadership prayers. We need to learn to pray like leaders. How do leaders pray? We've already mentioned in the session before, 1 Kings 3. When Solomon prayed, he said, Lord, I haven't got enough sense to get in out of the rain. I don't know how to count people, much less rule them. And so God said, you're my man. I can work with somebody like that. And so leaders can say, I'm overwhelmed. I think the job is much too great for me. I don't know how to do it. God said, I will be with you. That's God's theme with the leaders. I will be with you. And so we spend some time talking about that. And then at the end of that, we have somebody to lead us in a prayer that's similar to the prayer we've been talking about. The second part of the class is leadership projects. And I have many, many, many situations that come up. And we divide, a lot of times we'll have 30 people in the class. We divide the class into three elderships, three groups of 10. And we work on different issues that elders have to work with. You're a deacon in a church. Certain responsibilities have been assigned to you. It seems nothing always gets in the way of following through and seek the work is done. Seeing nothing is said to you, but despite your good intentions, it's seldom completed. What should you do? You're an elder. They want to send a missionary to Timbuktu, but a man with a lot of money said he thinks we need an educational wing. And what are you going to do about it? He said he'll give for the educational wing, but he'll withhold his contribution if you send the missionary. What are you going to do about it? And so we have a process by which they make decisions. And then the last part is leadership problems and possibilities. And I'll mention some of those. Second prayer is David's prayer of confession and psalm of forgiveness, Psalm 51, Psalm 32. And we talk about that, guilt, and how many times do you have to pray to have your sins forgiven. You know, I've heard preachers say if you ask God a second time to forgive you, he won't hear you because he's already forgotten what you're talking about. Well, evidently, David didn't know that because time after time after time after time, Psalm 51, cleanse me, help me, created me a clean heart, don't take your Holy Spirit away from me, purge me, and over again. Then leadership projects, and then we go to a leadership problem, how to evaluate and communicate the qualifications of an elder. The next leadership prayer, we talk about Psalm 103, the basis of prayer is the nature of God. Leadership projects. If a staff member becomes disqualified because of physical or moral reasons, what should leaders do? And we talk about that. And then what do you do if the person is not a paid staff member but a volunteer? Some people say you just have to put up with it. They're a volunteer because you can't fire a volunteer. That's interesting. That's interesting. Do you have to pay somebody to do what they said they were going to do? The next session is leadership prayers, a prayer of David, Psalm 139, God's invitation for inspection and correction. Leadership problems. When it comes time for a leader to resign, how can he work with a leadership team to make a good transition? I advise elders to have with themselves, and then as they appoint deacons and have preachers, to be sure they have a no-suicide contract in the agreement. One of the most hurtful things in relationship is suicide. Why did they do it? I had a granddaddy committed suicide, an uncle that committed suicide, a first cousin that committed suicide. Spent the last night with my granddaddy. I was 10 years old. Couldn't imagine why didn't he love me enough to stay around. But it also hurts churches. Some of the most traumatized churches is an elder who gets it up to here, and he can't take it anymore, and he stands up on Sunday morning with an I quit letter that maybe even his wife is surprised about. And one congregation where I worked as an interim, he did it on a Sunday night and nodded, and about 60% of the congregation over the next few weeks followed him out the door. We don't do that. That messes stuff up. And so I encourage them to get a no-suicide contract. That simply means that when I get ready to resign, I will give you advance notice. Deacon, elder, at least 3 months. We'll make a good transition. My elders at Barry's Chapel came up to me, and that would have been the fall of 2003. I told them before I came, I want to do interim ministry. And so I said, if you're looking for a 20-year man, I probably am not it. I want to get through enough to do interim ministry for a few years. God, if the Lord is willing. And so they said, Jerry, in our contract, it says 90 days. We'd like to have a little more time. As far as we know, in the 105-year history of our church, we've never had a planned transition. We'd like to try it one time, see how it works. So Gail and I got together, and we said, looks like about the first Sunday in April of 2007, which turned out to be April Fool's Day. So we announced that following June that we would be leaving the 1st of April of 2007, resigned 3 years ahead of time. I didn't want anybody to think I just got mad and walked out on an elder. So we had that transition plan. And so to me, and I've seen it work, by not doing it, and I've seen it work. When you come in and someone says, now I've just found out I'm going to be transferred in about 4 or 5 months, wanted to let you know, and here's this deacon in charge of this particular thing. He said, I want to do everything I can to make it smooth. An elder who says, my health's getting bad, and got some other family situations. I need to be relieved of this responsibility. And I'll work about 3 months, and whatever, if you want to appoint somebody else, but I just want you to know that. I encourage people to get that. I think it needs to be in writing. If you've read many of my blogs, I am sold on written agreements. You know where I learned that? University of Hard Knocks, whose colors are black, blue, and the school yell is ouch. First full-time work. They had never had a full-time preacher. I'd never preached full-time. We shared a lot of ignorance between us. We didn't have any. I still wonder if they really wanted me to come. Tom Holland had been driving up on weekends, and he told them they were ready for a full-time preacher. And he told me I ought to go there, and they said Jerry's the best man for the job, and I guess they wanted us to move. They didn't tell us to leave after we got there, but it wasn't really all that clear. We've been there about 9 months, and I asked them if I could have a week off around Christmas time. They said, sure. I said, yeah, that'd be good. Go see your family. In fact, they made up $30 and gave it to me. They were just tickled. And Gail said, what are you going to do with your $30? I said, well, Gail, if it's okay with you, I'd really like to have a pair of Sunday shoes. I said, mine now. I said, they get wet every time it rains. They got holes in the bottom and they're not worth fixing. She said, I think you need some Sunday shoes. How are we going to make a car payment? I said, oh, it's in the budget. It works out. I mean, we haven't had any trouble. She said, they won't pay us. I said, sure they will. She said, no, they won't. I said, yeah, they will. Gail was right. See, we hadn't talked about that. We didn't have any agreements. What did I learn from that? Need to have agreements. So I went to the next place, and sure enough, the elder sat down, 4 weeks off for gospel meeting, 2 weeks vacation, 90 days if we ask you to leave, 90 days if you decide to leave or until you find a new work. 8 years go by, wonderful work until November 19, 1976, 10:20 in the morning. So while I'm out looking for a place to preach, one night during a men's meeting, incidentally, that elder who asked me to resign had gone by a man's business that night and asked him what he thought would take to help the church. And he said, I think it'd be good if Jerry were to move, and said, I think that would improve it. And he came and told me. So a man called him out that week and said, I hear you fired Jerry Sunday morning. And I didn't tell, but somebody did. I hear you fired Jerry Sunday morning and didn't even talk to Robert. He said, yeah. He said, I can't serve under an elder like you. I think you ought to resign. He said, well, okay. And so Sunday, he got up and resigned. We have no elders. So they asked, are we paying Jerry there every Sunday for running around all over the country while he's looking for a job. And the treasurer said, yeah, we pay him every week. Jerry, what about that? Well, when I came and I named the elders, here was a 90-day agreement. Two of those elders have died and one has resigned. Brother Smith, what about that? After I've told my story, we had this agreement. He said, seemed like we talked about that, but I don't remember much of what was said. Boy, that's embarrassing. What did I learn from that? Not only do you need clear agreements, but they need to be written down. Well, I don't think that's very spiritual. Back in my daddy's day, they just shook hands, and a man's word was his bond. Man, if that worked out for your dad, congratulations. My rule is the only people who don't need to write it down are people who are never going to die and never going to forget. And they need to be working with people who are never going to die and never going to forget. Otherwise, write it down. Make one signature in blue so you know it wasn't forged. Make copies of it, back it up in Dropbox and Carbonite and put a copy in your safe deposit box. Why? Because my forgettery works better than my memory. And when we have a disagreement about what we agreed on, a memory aid is reading what we agreed on. And I don't think God thinks it's all that unspiritual to write stuff down. Did you know one time he made some agreements and he wrote it down in stone and did a duplicate before Xerox ever came into being? And so it's not unspiritual to write it down. So I tell people, get this agreement, get it written down, and then let a person know there are two ways you will not be held responsible for the non-suicide contract. Number one, if you have the most frequent symptom of heart trouble. You know what that is? Sudden death. That's the most frequent symptom. So if you do that, we're not going to hold you responsible for not giving 3 months notice. Or if you get run over by a Big Mac truck. So we talk about that. Number next, session five is the prayer of Jeremiah, the man who says, I quit. I'm tired of preaching. You tricked me into this and it's not much fun anymore. And then he said, but I couldn't quit. Fire's in my bones. And then he sing to the Lord, praise the Lord. He's over it now until about two or three verses later. And he said, I wish I'd never been born. I wish my mother was still pregnant. That's wishing a lot of bad stuff on your mother. Be 30, 35 years old, wanting your mama to be pregnant that long. That's horrible. Absolutely horrible. If Jeremiah, was he one of the good guys or one of the bad guys? He's one of the good guys. Can a leader pray a depressed prayer? Evidently. Because after he got over that, he talked about the kingdom and he talked about God saying their sins and their iniquities will I remember no more. He did some pretty good work. And so preachers and elders and deacons and leaders can get discouraged and say, God, I feel like quitting. I'm tired of the whole thing. Wished I'd never been born. Well, you're not very spiritual. I'm just trying to do like Jeremiah did. He came out okay. I thought I'd just tell you the truth. We need that kind of transparency, especially between ourselves and God. And then, if leaders don't deal with disqualified or ineffective leaders, what can an individual in the group? How do you get rid of a bad elder? That's one of the most frequently asked questions when I go into a church and come. How do you get rid of a bad elder? Would y'all like to know that today, or you want to come back later? Here's my answer. The best way I know to get rid of a bad elder is by having a lot of elder appreciation parties. All righty, next point. Now, to be honest with you, I don't know if that'll work. That's just something I say. But it worked with a preacher that I knew one time. I was fired. Elder resigned. Next business meeting said, I make a motion that we hire Jerry Barber as our next preacher. We've done good ever since he's been here. He's preached the truth. He works hard. Folks like him. Somebody said, I'll second that. And everybody but two people voted in favor. Whew. Boy, that's good. I'm unfired now. Johnny Smith said, Jerry, I need to talk to you just a minute. I said, okay, we went in, closed the door. He said, Jerry, he said, I hope you don't stay here and try to save this church. I think it'll hurt you and hurt your family and hurt this church. And said, I love you like a brother. And big old tears running down his cheek. Well, that made me mad, hurt my feelings. That's absolutely horrible. I get fired and I get hired. And then this nut comes up and says, probably ought to go ahead and look for a place to move. Horrible. Do my best studying when I'm jogging. Next morning I'm running and I start reflecting. What has Johnny Smith done ever since he moved to Madisonville, Kentucky? Good sermon, Jerry. Wow, I never thought of that. Well, good presentation, good preaching. Jerry, it's evident every time you teach a Bible class, you've really done your homework. You didn't just get up there and start talking. You studied. I appreciate that. Jerry, could you and Gail and Christian Jerry Wayne come over Thursday night? Barbara would like to cook supper for you, and we'd just like for you to know how much our family appreciates you and your family. He's done that time after time after time after time after time since he moved here. And then last night he says, I really think you ought to consider seriously moving. That if you know how to handle it. And I get to asking the question, was Johnny Smith telling me the truth when he complimented me and invited me for meals and said I was doing a good job? Or was he telling me the truth last night? Or third possibility, he tells what he thinks all of those times. You know what? I think I came up on number three, and I think he was exactly right. How was I able to hear him? Because he had given me a lot of appreciation parties. And when he said the hard stuff, after a fitful night and an angry response, at least on the inside, I said, yep, he's probably right. If all we do is gripe about elders and gripe about elders and gripe about elders, when we get ready to get rid of a bad elder, they'll say, well, what's different? That's all they've done is gripe, 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 gripe. A year after we appointed new elders at Barry's Chapel, November 19, 1995, we had an Elders Appreciation Day. We didn't know if anybody would take it after the fuss we'd been through, but we had a red carpet, a literal red carpet for the elders and their wives to walk in on. Each elder's wife received a dozen red roses. We had containers. We encouraged everybody to write a letter of appreciation. We had a party. 10 years after that, we had an elders appreciation party. We were 10 years fuss-free. See, they've been having the fuss every 2 years. Man, when you go 10 years, you're breaking records. And so we had another party. I like to have elder appreciation parties because 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, know them who labor among you and esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake. Be at peace among yourselves. Number two, our children need to hear that. If all they hear is griping about our shepherds, then who in the world will want to get into something like that? I want to have elder appreciation parties because I want to disagree with the elders. Well, what do you got? I don't have anything in mind, but surely sooner or later I want to disagree, and when I do, I want to have credibility. And so we talk about that. So this is some of the things we're talking about in the class. Lamentation chapter 3, that prayer that Jeremiah said, you've aged my skin and broken my bones. You shot my loins full of arrows. You won't listen to my prayers. You've broken my teeth with gravel. And when I remember all this, I have hope. Whoopee, whoopee, whoopee. Isn't that a motivational speech? And then he follows that by the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They're new every morning. I always thought that was a happy, clappy youth meeting song. But it's one that came out of deep despair. And he said, you can count on God. And so if Jeremiah can pray that, Jerry Barber can pray that. Number seven, we look at the prayer of Jesus for himself, his apostles, and disciples after them. And then the class project is, who are the leaders' leaders? Where do leaders go with their problems? We need somebody to talk to that's confidential, that's competent. We look at the leadership prayer of Jesus, Matthew 26. And then we talk about honoring leaders, which I just got through. We do a section on that. And then we talk about in one of our sections, how do you deal with death wishes for leaders? Is there a better way? You know what I'm talking about? Does that ring a bell with you? Death wishes for leaders. Y'all probably don't do that west of the Mississippi. I've always heard you're more spiritual over here than we are on the east side. Let me tell you what we do in Tennessee and Kentucky and Georgia. You know what it's going to take to get this church straightened out? A few good funerals. You west of the Mississippi? You've heard that? Surely not. On the west of the Mississippi. What's it going to take to get this church straightened out? A few good funerals. Question, do you want your church straightened out? How soon? Who do you want to die in the next 2 weeks? Is there a better way? Is there a better way? Got to be a better way. You mean you talk about that in leadership class? That's the nuts and bolts of what really is. Well, it oughtn't to be that way. Ought and is two different things. Why don't we talk about that? And see, here's the thing that's so disappointing. We get the exact funerals that we want, and it's not any better. The identified patient is often not the cause of the problems, but where the symptoms of the group surface. And so you bury him today, and somebody will be there next Sunday, so I'll take his place. And they're already trained. Why? Because that's the way the group is. That's the way the group is. If it's chronic, it's because everybody likes it the way it is better than what it would take to change it. And so that's one class. That's what I call the administrative side. Here's the shepherding part called learning to love my friends. And it's a friend with an S on it. Three purposes of this series of lessons is learning to appreciate Jesus more as my friend, trying to be a friend to others as Jesus is a friend to me, and telling people about my friend. This class meets from house to house, 3 hours at a time. We eat during that time. And Jesus is my friend because he understands me. Jesus understands me when I am lonely. Jesus understands me when I am tired. Jesus understands me when I am sad. One of the greatest opportunities we have is to minister to people with grief. We're losing. Everybody got to learn to be a good loser. We're going to be a good disciple of Jesus. We've got to learn to lose well. He who saves his life will lose it, but he who loses his life for my sake will save it. We've got to be good losers. And we're losing all the time, death and disappointment and all kinds of things. And we talk about how do we work with people like that? Jesus is my friend because he tells me the truth. How do we tell people the truth and as best of our ability not be offensive? Well, I told him the truth. I just told him what I thought. If I feel it, I'll think it. Yeah. Proverbs said a fool vents all his feelings, but a wise man holds it in to afterwards. Got to think. Got to be that non-anxious presence who distinguishes between feelings and thoughts and actions. Jesus is my friend because he has patience and serves me well. Can you imagine putting up with those apostles who time after time after time fussed about who's going to be greatest in the kingdom? What I do when I go on an interim, I like to have elders, staff, and spouses in this class. It's a good bonding experience. Helps us to get acquainted quickly. And we have discussions. We get to practice some. We get to practice. And we're going to talk more about the practicing at 2 o'clock. We have it first at our house. I like Gail to set the stage and to set the rules. We have the people. Gail's an excellent cook. She grew up at Child Haven in Cullman, Alabama. The summer before we got married, she worked for the children's home, cooked for them. She cooked for 125 people every day. You're talking about getting fed well. Wow. So she sets the stage and she serves in paper plates, because the purpose of the class is not to display our china and silver, but to eat together and talk together and let's learn something. So that's, incidentally, any of this stuff that would be helpful, if you'll send me an email, I can do that on PDF or Word, and I'd be glad to share it with you. I think we need to do training by dealing in shepherding experiences. People ask me, why do you run barefooted? Two reasons. Number one, it brings back good childhood memories. Number two, it is a good parable for life. People say, don't it hurt to get out there and run with that in shoes on? So far it does. Every half marathon, 13.1 mile half marathon I've done, when you get through, it scrapes every bit of the skin off the bottom of your feet and you usually have a blister on each heel. Ran yesterday morning, 4 miles, and my feet burned all day yesterday. But usually if I run a half marathon on Saturday, by Tuesday, I have never felt better in my life. If I felt better when I was 20, I don't remember it. I don't know if that says something about my memory or how I feel. Life is painful. You can't be a good farmer without discomfort, at least from observation. I've never done it, but it looks working from dawn till dusk, from can till can't. You cannot get a good education without outside reading and writing those horrible term papers. I just dreaded that like a whipping. Why'd you do it? I wanted to have written and get the grade. Life is painful. You can't be a good doctor, teacher, carpenter, whatever it is. You can't do it without pain, without preparation. But when pain is anticipated, chosen, and managed, it can really be good for you. Why do you choose to do that? Because I want the results of that. Jesus anticipated from that time, he began to say, we're going to Jerusalem, suffer many things of the elders, chief priests, and scribes, be killed, be raised again the third day. Why are you doing that? For the joy that was set before him. He didn't like the pain, he liked the joy. Jesus chose it, John 10, 17, and 18. Nobody takes it away from me. I have the power to lay it down, I have the power to take it again. I choose that. Well, I gotta do it. No, choose it, choose it, choose it. And number three, manage it. Gethsemane was his pain management seminar. He said, let's think about it just a minute. If there's any other way, is there a way we can make it less hurt? But I want your will to be done. People ask me, what do you do about gravel and glass? Well, I look where I'm going, and when I see some, I run around it. I don't run just smack dab over everything. I mean, I have not got a fixation on running a completely straight line. I'll dodge. You manage your pain. Manage your pain. I think people become shepherds, and it gets so painful many times that they're either ineffective or they quit if they anticipate it. Why is that helpful? If I anticipate it, I don't think I'm going crazy when it happens. I developed a three-prong philosophy that's been helpful to me. I believe it's normal to be abnormal. If a normal day is clear, 72 degrees, and all the cars and appliances are running, and all the kids and mama and everybody is well, I don't have many normal days. In an abnormal situation, I can't make anybody else do anything. Won't you make him do it? Can't. Number three, in an abnormal situation, which is really normal since it's normal to be abnormal, since I can't make anybody else do anything, what's the best thing I can do today to please God and serve others? If I'm doing that, it's going to be a good day. And so I think we need to have some planned pain. Patrick Lencioni, in the book called The Advantage, he said when he goes in to consult with a business, he doesn't want to see their products. He doesn't want to see their spreadsheets. He doesn't want to talk to their customers. He wants to go to their meeting and see if they have animated, enthusiastic conflict. He said, that's the only way you're ever going to run a business, profitably and helpfully. I see elders and elders' meetings being so careful not to disagree that nobody tells what's really on their mind. He said, a good business will say, I believe it ought to be done. Man, if you do that, here's what's going to happen. No, it won't. I saw this over there. I think that's crazy. Well, it may be crazy, but think about this and think about this. Well, I don't like it that way, but what's going to be best for the business? And you anticipate, you go on that and you're lively with it. And when we get through, the CEO said, okay, thank you all. Man, it's been a great meeting. I like the way you hollered at each other. And you, anybody else, incidentally, have anything else you want to say? I appreciate you telling what you really think. Now, here's the way we're going to do it. And everybody said, okay, I got to have my way. I mean, I got to have my say, and we're going to do it. And what you did, you got the best ideas that you could possibly get. Here's the way, and I don't see that very often in elders' meetings. I don't know if it'll work. I'd be glad to have your feedback. I have recommended that you start doing that by going through rotation, and each elders' meeting, one elder picks out another, and number one, gives him a sincere compliment. And number two, say, here's one way I believe you could improve. Compliment, criticism. Compliment, criticism. Well, you might hurt his feelings. Yeah. And you might tell him something that nobody else has ever told him that would really bless him. Watch and listen for good examples to learn from and imitate. Schedule effective elders from other congregations to speak on the development and work of elders, and visit with effective elders individually and as a group. Thank you. And at 2:00, we're going to talk about shepherds shepherding shepherds.